Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Amy, editor at ExchangeWire, and I'm pleased to be joined today by our CEO, Rachel Smith. Hi, Rachel. Welcome back. It's been a while since we've had you on the pod.
Yes. Hi, Amy. Thank you very much. Delighted to be here. You're quite right. I was in the wrong time zone for a couple of months over in Australia, so it's nice to be back in the podcast fold.
Yeah, great to have you back here and seeing you in the office again. And our guest for today, Shiv Gupta, who is founder of consultancy U of Digital. Thanks for joining us, Shiv. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Excited to be on the pod for Rachel's Welcome Back podcast. So
there we go.
Thank you.
Especially
organized.
Yeah, great to have you both with us for today's discussion. So we'll be looking at Scope 3's agentic media platform, Sonos cancelling its streaming video player, and some new figures revealing the growth of AI-powered shopping. So starting with Scope 3 for our first piece of news from the media leader. Scope 3 has launched their agentic media platform for partners to build and sell agentic media products that are efficient and sustainable. It's accessible to publishers, ad tech platforms, curators and agencies who can use it to develop AI agents and custom algorithms for media buying. So Shiv, I'll come to you first. How positive could Scope 3's new platform be for ad industry players? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's extremely interesting, extremely impactful for the space potentially. Right now, obviously, we're kind of at an inflection point in our industry and just in all industries because of AI. And, you know, I think any company that comes in with disruptive AI-based technology, like kind of starting with AI as a foundation, have just a huge opportunity, right, to disrupt. And, you know, advertising, ad tech, martech, you know, there's these giant companies, they have, you know, legacy technology that's been around for a long time. And when you're a big company and you're making money off of your legacy tech, changing that, you know, very rapidly to adapt to a new thing is hard. It's hard. There's people, there's money, there's all sorts of things at stake. And so, you know, the luxury that a startup like Scope 3 has is it's not strapped down by all of that, let's call it baggage, right? And so I think Scope 3 has a huge opportunity to disrupt the space, to impact the space. Obviously, so many things we do in advertising, I think, will fall victim, let's say, to AI for good reasons, right? Like all the platforms that we click buttons in all the time to do advertising things, like obviously agentic AI will change all of that very fast. All of the reporting, right, and analytics that we do, agentic AI will change all of those things really fast, right? And so the companies that are getting ahead of that and doing that are going to have a huge opportunity. And I think that that's what Scope 3 basically announced. It's like, hey, look at us. We're going to be the company to do it. And no better founder, right, than Brian O'Kelly to lead that charge, given his status as the godfather of ad tech. So I think it's going to be hugely impactful.
Yeah. What do you think on that, Rachel?
There's been so much chat this week about Bok and being the godfather of ad tech. It's really, I'm really enjoying all the chat. I think I agree with Shiv that it's going to be an inflection point, I think, for the industry. I think it's going to be this moment onwards that we really start to see wide scale adoption, use and adoption of agentic AI. So moving on from the world of generative AI to incorporating agentic AI into the sort of day-to-day operational capabilities of advertising platforms. And that's what's super exciting about this, right? I think what's also exciting about it is however many years ago it was that Brian O'Kelly launched Scope 3. I feel like I want to say it was 3 or 4 years ago. Maybe it was longer than that. My ad tech, you know, sort of time frame is a bit warped because some stuff feels like it's been around forever and some stuff feels like it's still brand new, right? But when he launched Scope 3, I thought it was really interesting, but I did wonder where it was ultimately going to go. You know, I've got experience of working in the world of environmental sustainability from a previous career path when I was working in the public sector. And, you know, over in the public sector, they've been obsessed with carbon reduction targets for sort of the last 20, 30 years. And I know from that experience just how hard it is to move the needle on reducing carbon. And so I just wondered where, you know, what the journey for a business like Scope 3 would be like, because they're trying to impact a very important and serious agenda, but it takes a lot of levers to really start to see some serious reduction of carbon output across any number of industries, let alone digital advertising. So I just thought that there was going to be, there was going to be another chapter for Scope 3. They weren't just going to stop at measuring carbon output. I mean, they'd always said they weren't going to stop there, but I was intrigued to know what's next. And now we do know what's next. This is super exciting, right? I think it's super smart, you know, adding this sort of suite, what will be a suite of agentic AI tools to a platform that's already gathered a lot of really useful data across the industry. And I think it is signaling a number of potential hugely positive outcomes for the advertising industry in general. And we can go into that in a bit more detail. But I also then think the other really exciting element to it is that it is going to it's sort of lit a fire, I think, under the sort of tech innovators in our industry. And I think you're going to start to see some really interesting competitive solutions coming out, maybe not necessarily competing directly with Scope 3's product, but I think it's really going to start a new wave of tech innovation in the industry. And it feels like the early days, right? The Right Media into App Nexus days of ad tech, which is exactly the kind of experience and kudos that Brian O'Kelly can bring to this product and to this company and to the industry at the moment. So that's what sounds and looks really exciting to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. A couple more things I'll add there real quick is, you know, I think to your point, Rachel, it's funny how Scope 3 is going from like cute little sustainability company that, you know, ad people are just like, oh, you know, who cares about that? I'm a capitalist, you know, and now all of a sudden it's going from that to like, oh no, we're going to revolutionize this whole industry doing all the things using agentic AI. And like, it's a big time pivot, let's call it, in a way, like, for lack of a better term, they're pivoting.
Absolutely.
and they're pivoting from like a small TAM to a freaking huge TAM, you know, like, we will do all the things. I do think it's really smart that the first kind of thing they're pushing out into market is around brand safety and brand suitability, because, you know, as with any smart business, like, in order to get traction, you have to be known for something, you have to be famous for something, you have to start somewhere very specific. And I think pointing their arrow at brand suitability and brand safety makes a lot of sense, because right now, the zeitgeist around that topic is it's broken, right? There are two incumbents, DoubleVerify and IAS, that, you know, they have a duopoly on the space, and the space is messier than ever, right? So have they been doing their job, right? And everyone's kind of perceived them to be somewhat of a tax on the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Brian's coming in and saying, well, hold on, they're doing it wrong, right? They're doing it in this very static way. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we using LLMs? Why aren't we using AI to do it in a more dynamic way? That's what brand suitability and brand safety calls for, right? So mm-hmm. I think that's very smart. And then, you know, if his strategy plays out probably the way he wants it to, that gets traction, and it's easy for him to parlay that into all these other agents and use cases.
Absolutely. And, you know, Shiv, I was just catching up with your newsletter actually earlier on today. Very helpful, because it's a good segue into this conversation. But I like the idea that, you know, what we'll end up with in this new product within Scope 3 is a platform that has a suite of agentic AI tools that can be pointed at a number of different capabilities across the, across the advertising value chain and the advertising supply chain. The element about starting with brand safety is, I think, first, you know, pertinent because it is something that everybody's naturally very obsessed with at the moment and concerned with. And then also the way that, you know, from some of the stuff I've read in the media over the last couple of days about the product, the way that they're kind of using agentic AI to improve brand safety, application is really interesting, right? They're talking about how they're using agentic AI in a part of that activity where humans aren't necessarily controlling that at the moment. And so they'll make it more efficient and create a series of basically rules around what brand safety will mean to, you know, X agency or brand or buyer. And there'll also be and excuse me for the very clumsy way that I'm explaining this. I'm showing up my own the limits of my own knowledge on the platform today. But the other interesting element is that they've incorporated a human loop that can then cross-check what the agent has come up with in terms of a result. You know, and are those the right results? Are those optimizing in the way that we would expect them to optimize? How can we improve this down the line? And I think, you know, once people start to see how that actually works in practice, then we can start to see the full scope of how these agents and this particular methodology could be applied to a number of capabilities. And that is where you're going to start to see lots of competition and, you know, yeah, lots of activity that will hopefully improve the advertising supply chain.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see this spur on competition in the market.
For sure.
And is there anything you think users of the new platform should be worried or cautious about, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd say that I think where caution will be applied is that use and application perhaps of agentic AI within advertising technology platforms will feel new to lots of people in the industry. It won't to lots of others, but it will feel new, and it's probably likely to feel new to brands and advertisers. So maybe they're going to require a little bit of of test and learn to cope with some skepticism or reluctance that they might have about whether this tool will work. Will really work better than other tools that are available in the market at the moment. And then I also, again, getting back to the element of the decision-making and action-taking element of the agent that can be cross-checked by a human, I think that probably needs to be proven out. Like, we need to see how that works in practice. And, you know, will there be some sort of teething issues associated with how that actually becomes embedded in the way that buyers will use the platform? I don't know. You know, I've got no idea. Maybe there won't be at all, but I think those will be some of the things that people will have their eyes on. The other thing I think just from a, you know, should people be worried or cautious about, I would be looking at proving out some of the efficiency claims that they're making about using agentic AI to improve some of these capabilities. I'd just like to see how that's measured and how we can actually prove genuine improvement, especially because I think, you know, I read again something else in the media yesterday or the day before that one of the things they want to do is to be able to continue to reduce the carbon footprint of digital advertising. Well, we know that building out a lot of these agentic AI tools and any AI tools in general requires a lot of power in and of itself. So are we actually seeing some genuine, improvement in carbon output? If so, is that over a long period of time or is that something that happens immediately? So I'd like to see maybe just a bit more, sort of measurement and efficacy around some of those claims.
No, I think, Rachel, you hit it on the head. I mean, it's all the issues are going to, you know, a lot of the issues will stem from like all the things that people are concerned about with AI, generally speaking, right? It's, you know, will the AI still hallucinate, you know, how does that affect, you know, how much autonomy are we going to give the AI in order to fulfill the promise, you know? And if we're not letting it have autonomy, are we actually improving anything and by how much, right? I think that's a big question. You mentioned, you know, the people aspect of it, the inertia aspect of it. I run a training company, so quick plug, like I think people need to train, and get used to these tools and be able to use them. So I think that's a big element. And then, you know, I think like it's going to be interesting to see, I think, how AI evolves over time, because I think the competitive aspect's very interesting as well. I think, you know, with what they're building, I think they're very quickly going to create lots of frenemies, right? So I think about like some of these integrations that they've announced this week, like, oh, we're integrating with Amazon, we're integrating with the Trade Desk. Well, all of these agents that they're building already compete, you know, in some shape or form with the products that Amazon and Trade Desk and Meta and Google offer, right? Uh-huh. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that aspect plays out, because, you know, the barrier to entry to building agents and LLMs and, you know, bots and all the AI things right now is very low. It's probably going to get lower, right? It's easy to build AI in the age of AI. And so it's just going to be interesting to see, like, how that, how the industry evolves from a competitive standpoint in the age of AI, like what a true moat even means in the age of AI, and like which companies put up walls and where and why. I think that's going to be an interesting kind of, let's call it a challenge or maybe an opportunity, you know, that we're going to see play out over the next several years.
I mean, you also can't imagine, right, that some of those companies that you mentioned there, Shiv, aren't building agents of their own, right, to continue to improve the tools that they've already got in existence. So I think that's going to be the other interesting thing, is that we may well see some product announcements coming out in the coming couple of months that we knew nothing about, but they'll be spurred to bring those to market maybe sooner than they were prepared to. I don't know.
Yeah, like big tech, like Amazon and Google's like, wait, we're integrating with Scope 3. We have all the money in the world, and AI is not hard to build. And if anything, we own the LLMs. Like, we own Gemini. We own Anthropic or whatever. Like, why aren't we doing this? Why are we partnering with Scope 3, right? Like, we have no barrier to entry to do this. So it's just going to be fascinating to see it play out from a competitive perspective.
Totally. Back to the wild, wild west.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how it all develops. Now on to our next story from The Verge. Sonos is abandoning its plans to release a streaming video player this year. The product was set to be its next major hardware launch. It had already been in development and even spent time in testing. For the moment, Sonos will continue its efforts to restore the performance and reputation of its software. So Shiv, from this news, what can we deduce about Sonos's current situation?
Well, we know Sonos is going through some tough times right now, right? They had a lot of turmoil. Their CEO left, and, you know, they had a lot of issues with new software last year, I believe. And so they're just kind of, I think, refocusing and doubling down on their existing product suite and, you know, improving that as opposed to going into a new category or new sector. I think that makes sense. You know, us being ad people here, I think it's really interesting to think about the Trade Desk's angle, right? The Trade Desk obviously announced Ventura a few months ago, their new TV operating system, and Sonos was going to be the first hardware partner for that. And so, you know, what happens to Ventura, right? I think that's interesting to think about. Like, how reliant were they on Sonos as a launch partner? Did they have other deals lined up with other OEMs? You know, Jeff Green obviously has demonstrated over and over and over again, he's extremely strategic. I would imagine they're not just like, okay, Ventura's done too. You know, like, I'm sure they've got other stuff cooking. I think it's really interesting and fascinating to dig into that and think about that a little bit and figure out, like, I think, you know, people, when Ventura was first announced and even the Sonos device was first announced, people were like, what are they doing? It's such a, you know, such a fragmented market. There's so many different players, like, they can't enter. And I actually disagree. I think it's a perfect market to enter because there are no clear-cut winners, right? Like, there's nobody has won that market, and you could still argue it's nascent. And so why wouldn't you go into a market where you see a pie chart with 30 different logos and no one logo with more than, let's say, 10, 15% of market share? That's a perfect market to be entering, to try to come in and you know, come in and then eventually aim for consolidation. And, you know, why not the Trade Desk? I think the Trade Desk has a great opportunity. I think it's very smart and strategic for them to try, especially because all the other TV OS companies, you know, you think about Roku, you think about Samsung, LG, et cetera. First of all, they're all OEMs, right? Yeah. Google, Amazon, they're all OEMs. They're all device companies. So they have their own walled garden. So when they're working with the other long tail OEMs, those guys are like, wait, I'm going to partner with my competitor. And that's always been the Trade Desk's pitch in ad tech, right? Like, wait, hey, publishers, why are you partnering with Google? They're your biggest competitor for ad tech. Like, what are you doing? And so it's the same pitch on the OEM side. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Trade Desk knows how to make that pitch. And then the other aspect of it is the Trade Desk is better at monetizing, you know, CTV, let's say, better than everybody at it, right? And their core business is a DSP business, not a hardware business. It's not a TV business. And so they can come in, I think, and offer much more advantageous rev share to all these OEMs to like get traction, right? So I think it's a smart strategy, but it's going to be interesting to see now where does that strategy go because Sonos has dropped out. Does it push them off course or does do they kind of stay on course with Ventura?
Well, that's what's super interesting, right, in the way that you've sketched that out there, Shiv, is that, you know, it seems as though they've got just as much opportunity to be competitive in the market without Sonos and to just, you know, offer their platform to all of the other providers in the industry. I mean, you're right. Like, you know, the streaming video player market is, well, some would argue it's oversaturated. Actually, you know, it's more that it's fragmented, as you said, and people have got sort of, you know, small, concise shares of the market. And if you also think about it through the lens of, you know, well, why is it so competitive? It's because typically, you know, people are these days relying on, well, depending on what market we're talking about, if we're talking about the US and maybe the UK, Europe, Australia, those sorts of markets, people are relying on their smart TVs really to just get access to all of that inventory, to all of that, you know, to all of that content. And so therefore those over the top solutions, you know, become a little less important because people are just using their televisions to access that sort of stuff. But then on the other hand, if you're talking about a quality viewing experience, actually what you want is something, you want a piece of hardware that's superior to what's in your smart TV because your smart TV is so thin these days, the sound is terrible, you know, there's no real depth of experience there. And that makes, in my mind, someone like Sonos a perfect, you know, a perfect competitor in the industry only. They happen to have been trying to launch that product during a period of internal chaos and probably financial, you know, turbulence. I can only imagine that the main reason they've rode back on the product is for financial reasons. I can't see why you would get this far down the line with a product that's been tested and it's been in development for so long and suddenly ditch it. You know, off the back of the turmoil that they've been experiencing throughout last year, the failed app launch and then, you know, staff layoff, CEO exit. It just speaks financial issues to me. So
actually, hey, Rachel, sorry to interrupt. On that point, I think there's a little note in the article that says there's a Sonos trade spokesperson that said, we still will continue our relationship with the Trade Desk. That's a very important relationship to us. Mm. And so maybe to your point, like, why else would the Trade Desk have a relationship with Sonos? I don't see. So maybe it's just like, hey, it's not like this is going away. We're going to revisit it and we will continue to work with the Trade Desk. It's just maybe further down the line, to your point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I kind of think that the sort of fragmentation of this part of the market is set to continue, really. I don't see it becoming dominated by one particular player because there's no reason for it to be. In the same way that streaming services have become super fragmented in most very developed, certainly English-speaking markets, so again, the US, the UK, Australia, and these days more than ever, you know, even a year ago, I'd say people were still, you know, there was still a couple of streaming providers that were head and shoulders above others. Maybe statistically, that situation is still the case, but if you speak to the average person, people are watching stuff wherever they can get it. People are picking and choosing. You know, people are taking up bite-sized subscriptions and then cancelling them once they're done with the box set. I just think that that sense of fragmentation isn't actually going anywhere. So there is plenty of opportunity for a whole number of players. As for Sonos, they've got some, unfortunately, some challenges within their business. Personally, I love their products. The app was terrible, and there's been I've had lots of issues in my household since that. But we've sort of managed a way to kind of get through it. And they've got fantastic products, so I hope they pull themselves together.
Yeah, I think one quick note on what you were saying, like I think the TV UI and even the hardware today is somewhat of a commodity, right?
Yeah.
Like I've got three or four different operating systems in my home, right? I've got a Google Home, I've got a Roku, I've got an LG, yeah. And I don't care. Like, I'm not like, oh, I definitely want to use the LG TV. It's so much better. Like, it doesn't matter, right? They're all just an interface that is somewhat of commodity. They surface the apps. I click into an app, I watch something. They're all clunky too. None of them are like amazing. But I think at the end of the day, like, the UI and the front end to the consumer feels like a commodity. So I think about like, okay, well, how does somebody come in and consolidate that market or make hay in that market? And it's got to be the back end, right? The back end is the monetization, right? And that's the advertising of it. And that's why another reason I think the Trade Desk and Ventura have a really good opportunity building, you know, they don't have to build some amazing differentiated UI. And like, if they do, that's amazing, right? Like, some company at some point will come along and maybe build the Apple of TVs, the iPhone of TVs, and that will be an amazing thing. But in order to get traction and to make hay in this market, they can come at it from the back end angle of it, which is monetization, right? Hey, we are going to monetize the heck out of the ad inventory on the TV better than any of these other companies. We are not a walled garden, so we're going to share that out with the OEMs, and that's how we're going to consolidate this market. So I said it a couple times, I'll say it again, like, I think it's a smart strategy, and we'll see now where they go with Ventura. Like, you know, is the next company or OEM to make an announcement with the Trade Desk like Sony or TCL? Exactly. Or, you know, one of
could
these
be anyone, right?
Westinghouse, you know? Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all progresses. And moving us on to the third story now, which is from Forbes. According to data released by Adobe Analytics, traffic to US e-commerce websites from generative AI sources was up 1,200% in February compared to 6 months ago, and AI-driven traffic has been doubling every 2 months in September. They also found that of those who have used AI for shopping, 92% said it enhanced their experience, and 87% said that they're more likely to use AI for larger or more complex purchases. The data is based on over 1 trillion consumer visits to US retail sites. Shiv, what does Adobe's analytics data tell us about consumer behavior?
Well, I think there's an obvious, like, no shit conclusion. Like, yes, everyone's using AI, and they're using it for all sorts of things. And obviously, one of those things is researching products and price comparison and all those things. I use it for that. It's super helpful. It's way better than some of the traditional ways of like shopping on the internet. So there's that aspect. I think obviously, again, we're ad people, right? So my brain immediately goes to like, okay, what are all the advertising implications here? You know, there's some surface level stuff, which I think is really interesting, which is, okay, well, advertisers are not probably getting the same traffic from search. They're not getting the same conversion, you know, volume from search. All the search metrics are probably going down and to the right, right? And so what does that mean for an advertiser? I think it means a few things. One is you have to look at, you know, how you attribute value to advertising when search is not really that catch-all for you anymore as much. And so, like, okay, how are you swimming upstream with your strategy? How are you changing your measurement and your attribution to capture the value that is built upstream before somebody goes to an AI and starts to price compare or shop? So I think that's important. And then all the other things, right? Like, how are you adjusting your creative, your channel mix, your partners, your audience strategy, all of those things, right? So there's that aspect of it for sure. And then there's all the other things to think about, right? Which is, how will advertising creep into, and not even creep into, it's already happening. Like, how is advertising going to become part and parcel with AI tools and LLMs? It's already happening, right? We see it with Google. I think Google, what is it called? Google Answers.
Gemini? No.
Google has the, I forget, like when you search for something on Google, they have like a AI generated answer.
Gemini overview.
AI overviews, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it's a Gemini thing. So AI overviews, I think, has an ad aspect to it already. Perplexity has an ad team now. Like, they hired a senior guy named Taz Patel to be, you know, the advertising guy for that business. So that's going to be interesting. They've already started introducing some ads into Perplexity. And so that's going to be very fascinating. And then, you know, I think there's a short-term ad opportunity, which is, how do we just insert ads next to the LLM responses and the You know, in the actual tools and the bots themselves. I think that's a short-term, near-term opportunity that people are already capitalizing on. But I think the big picture opportunity that everyone is thinking about and starting to talk about is, how do you influence AI? How do brands and advertisers and agencies actually influence the AI, influence agents to make decisions that are favorable for their business, right? So if I'm a user and I go to AI and say, hey, I'm going on spring break to Cancun, help me find the best itinerary, the best hotel, here's what my family profile is, how does you know, United Airlines or Hilton or a tour company influence the AI to then have the AI tell me that's the best solution for my needs? That's the big frontier, right? It's basically SEO for AI. What is SEO for AI going to look like? I think that's the really exciting thing to think about. And that's going to be a massive, massive, massive opportunity.
Mm, yeah. On that note, how should the ad industry be adapting to the shifts in consumer behavior?
When I was originally thinking about this question, just sort of doing a bit of prep for the podcast, the first thing I thought of is, you know, what does this tell us about consumer behavior? Well, it tells us that Gen AI is replacing search for the moment, right? Specifically Gen AI. Then I think if we consider Amy's second question there, so how's the industry going to adapt to this shift in consumer behavior? I think it's absolutely along the lines of what you've just outlined there, Shiv, which is that it starts with all of us using, you know, Gen AI as general search functionality. So, you know, explain this, what's happening there, what does this mean, define this, find me that. And then it starts to branch out into more broadly how we consume content and how we ingest that content. So summarize this article for me, you know, debate this, this source says this versus this, you know, etc. Asking more complex questions. And the result of that is that that part of that becomes the way that, you know, Gen AI models then get trained to produce more accurate information and more comprehensive information. And I think what we're seeing is consumers starting to get very comfortable with that shift in the way that they search for information and content on the internet. And so advertising very typically follows the sort of eyeballs and follows where people are and tries to insert itself into what people are doing. And if we think about the world of digital advertising and all of the tools that we've got around us that we're trying to use to make advertising, you know, more relevant, better quality, more engaging, less intrusive, more accurate, you know, not purporting, you know, to advertise false information or to support false information or to support nefarious activities and made for advertising sites. If we think that if we think of all of those tools sort of gathered up together, what would be great is if we could find a way to bring those tools together, make them work more effectively and make them work more efficiently. And that's what AI, I think, promises to do, a little bit going back to what we were talking about at the start of the podcast with respect to Scope 3's suite of agentic tools and the ones that will be built in the future. And I think consumers are already on that journey, because if you're thinking about your own, you know, Gen AI and LLM usage, I'm using that stuff intertwined with then separate search results and search research and other counter searches to double check what I'm getting through, you know, through Gen AI results. And what I want as a consumer is for all of that to just be brought together more seamlessly. And as a consumer that's got some form of a moral compass, I want the people that produce all of that information to be rewarded for it. So if we're talking about, you know, journalist-led, independent thought-led content that's typically produced by news publishers, I want to know that that's all being, you know, that's all being paid for appropriately and it's being fact-checked and it's accurate. If it is the example that you've just given there, Shiv, an itinerary for a trip, I want that information all brought together, and I want to know that I've got a, you know, that I've been presented with a range of options. It's not just one particular advertiser's option. It's a number of options so that I can access some competition in the market. And I just think that if we can find a way for to, you know, if we can find a way to apply advertising in this context, in an AI context that works for consumers, then that's the holy grail, right?
Yes.
Are we anywhere near that at the moment? Absolutely not. Are all of the AI tools, like the Gen AI tools that we're using at the moment, grappling with how to do that? 100%, exactly like you've just mentioned. You know, it has to be the case that, you know, Perplexity, Gemini, ChatGPT, no matter what their current business models are, they are going to have to become diversified as we go, you know, as their services become more and more popular. At the same time, publishers are going to need to keep pace with how their content is being used and reused in an AI context. And that's then the next stage is that's what brands and, you know, and product owners need to do for their for marketing and advertising their brands and their products. So that's both a sort of a content and a search challenge. And I think that this change in consumer behavior tells us where consumers are going. We're going to different places for our search and for our content, and a lot of that is AI generated. And those that are, you know, that are using and commercializing AI tools already know that. We just need to bring all of those disparate pieces together and make them work. And I think there's going to be loads of opportunities, even with some of the advertising formats that we've already got, that are already widely used and widely consumed in, you know, display content. There's got to be a way to repurpose those much more efficiently and effectively and impactfully in an AI context. I'd love the idea of, you know, I'm not, of course, I work in the industry, so maybe I see this through a different lens, but I don't find video advertising necessarily intrusive if it's the right ad, if it's in the right context, if I can still navigate my way around the content that I'm wanting to consume. There's got to be a way to deliver that sort of advertising in an AI format that is better than anything we've ever had before, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. I agree with everything you've said. I think it's so early, and the evolution of like the consumer-facing products is going to be rapid, and it's going to look very different a few years from now. So it's hard to even think about and imagine like where advertising fits in when we don't know what the product market kind of fit will be from a consumer standpoint.
Yeah.
What the form function will look like. I think it's interesting. There was one point in the article about how because people tend to use Gen AI more on desktop than mobile, there's like the shift actually going back from mobile back to desktop in a weird way. And I was thinking about that a little bit, and I'm like, okay, that's interesting, but that is definitely temporary, right?
100%
like
that is temporary.
Very temporary, because all of these, first of all these LLMs are obviously adapting their tool set for mobile, but I think the most important kind of form factor evolution will be voice, right? Like voice, we will not be typing with our LLMs very soon, right? And OpenAI already has the product where it's like, we will be talking to these very, very smart LLMs. And if we're talking to them to do the things we want them to do or that for them to inform us about the things we want to be informed about, well, the advertising implications all of a sudden change, right? The form factor is fundamentally different. And so, like, what does that look like, right? If it's just 100% kind of like a voice product, which it will be. It will be. We will not be typing with these things. Minimally, like, only, like, the coders and the people trying to, like, build visuals and things. But, like, the average consumer will only be talking to their LLM or their, you know, their agent. What will the advertising look like in that case, right? You won't be able to have video ads. You won't be able to have display ads, you know. And so it will be more about influencing the AI from a voice perspective. So anyways, that was another kind of angle out there. I don't have a good answer or like a good kind of where will it end up, but it's just interesting to think about the medium and the form factor.
100%, because, you know, I mean, like anything voice related, I find really interesting at the moment because I'm spending so much of my time in an audio environment. Like I'm just, you know, I'm going large on not, you know, I've always been a massive music consumer, but I'm going large on not just podcasts, but audio books and all sorts of audio products that I'd never really consumed that much before. You add sort of voice search and voice capabilities into that, and I can imagine that that's the main way that I'm consuming information on a day-to-day basis. Now, what I also think is interesting is imagining what that's going to do to us as consumers in general, our behavior, because what I don't want is to be sitting on a train, you know, coming into central London to get to the office and everyone chatting into their phones to, you know, chatting queries into their phones to get results, which, you know, they typically would have done via a search engine, right? So there's still
Rachel, you don't. You don't want that to happen, but that's going to happen.
Well, it already is, right? Like,
we're already staring at our phones doing it.
That's what people are, yeah, you already walked down the street and that's what people are going to do. And you already get on trains and someone is listening to something out loud and you're like, but I suppose my point is I think there's still going to be, and also getting back to your point, earlier point there, Shiv, which is that interacting with Gen AI and LLMs is at the moment still a bit more in desktop than it is on mobile. I think we're going to use these tools interchangeably for a while, but they're just going to have different functions, right? It's like, it's like the good old QR code, which we thought was dead and buried until COVID came along and then everyone thought, oh, actually, there's a new use for this. I think that's what's going to happen. It will be oscillating between undertaking our search, what is currently considered our search activity, in completely new ways via the same hardware for a little while. Then we're going to move to new hardware. Then we're going to go back to the old hardware, but we're not going to be searching in the same way. And, you know, again, it's a really interesting point in consumer behavior history and a really interesting inflection point for the advertising industry. And it's going to look totally different, I think, in another 12, 24 months' time.
Yeah. I also think it's going to maybe inject some new life into like AR and VR, right?
Yeah. Because
It's just like AR and VR have been pretty clunky and that hasn't gotten mass adoption. But imagine your, you know, AR experience with your little headphones or your glasses or whatever, having like that human touch. Right now it doesn't feel like, it feels off, right? I have glasses on my face. I'm like trying to take pictures but now all of a sudden I have like basically an agent that I can talk to. And like, I don't have to do things that are weird and clunky and robotic. I can just talk to somebody more naturally and do the things I want, right? It's like the voice aspect. The AR has, I think they've done a good job visually of like, okay, well, you know, we will overlay technology in your like visual world, but audio wise, they hadn't nailed that. But I think AI coming in, it's like, oh, now we can marry the very natural kind of audio aspect of, you know, AR with the visual aspect of it. If that, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I think that's going to be interesting to kind of track how they inject it into like AR and VR.
Well, and because I think your wider point is really important there, that that AR and VR has kind of been clunky. Like, it's not, people are not walking down the street using AR and VR headsets, right? So, but you can't imagine that there won't be a time where that's more likely. So, you know, it feels like now is the right time for some of those tools to become all the more intuitive. And next thing you know, we're all using them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have seen her, you know, like you just had the headphones and you're just talking to this person in his ear, like that. We're all going to probably be doing some form of that at some point, not too far in the distant future.
I think you're probably right. Just hopefully not too loudly.
Yeah. And not doing it the way maybe he was doing it in that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like you said, Shiv, the voice makes everything so much more human. Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll see a huge amount of innovation in the coming years with all of that. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much, Shiv, for joining us. It was great to have your insights on the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun, Amy and Rachel. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back at some point. And thank you, Rachel, as always.
My pleasure. And I hope we were worth getting up early for, Shiv.
Yeah, it was totally worth waking up earlier than my kids.
Well, at least we didn't make you get up at 4 a.m.
That's true.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, guys, and thanks to all our listeners. That was today's Mad Tech Podcast.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.